Coming to you live from inside of an old boot, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is Toe Fungus, and this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 109, those are some fat tires.
Welcome back, alarmists, to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And today we're going to be talking to you about a game idea that we actually had on air 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 1 week ago, some number of weeks ago.
I think it was just one.
It may have just been one.
But hold on a minute. Just hold your horses and cattle and other assorted barnyard creatures.
I'm holding them.
Just hold on to them.
I'm holding them closely.
Because I feel like there's a story worth telling that occurred in... during our meal before the podcast this eve. So, as you may have guessed from the content of our podcastings, that sounded like poop a little bit. Johannes and I have known each other for some time. We're very good friends. We go places together. We ride to work every morning on a tandem bicycle. So this leads occasionally to people out in the world to making mistaken assumptions about our lives and our relations to one another. And so this evening, we were at the local Greasy Spoon, and we're sitting there, we're having our meal. I'm eating a burger, I'm interacting with potatoes and meat in a fairly stern manner, I feel. And Johannes is enjoying his gigantic salad straight from the island of Greece.
Yep.
And Greece isn't an island, is it? I think it's connected to the mainland.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's maybe the salad was from an island. Maybe there's a Grecian island.
Like Ionia or Ithaca or Sparta?
Malta?
Athens?
Detroit?
Anyway, so we've finished our food and we're getting ready to go when the waitress swings by and says, "Hey, we're under new management. Would you guys like some rice pudding?" At which point she deposits, with a knowing wink, two bowls of rice pudding in front of us.
Yep.
And, you know, we had them. They were good. Like, they had, you know, a little bit of the cinnamon on top and, you know, they kind of looked, it looked grody. Like
it looked like cottage cheese with some dirt sprinkled on it.
Yeah, like, it didn't look all that appetizing, but...
tasted pretty good.
It's, you know, two grown men just eating rice pudding together in a restaurant. And that's the kind of thing that happens to us frequently.
Yeah.
You know, people give us this kind of wink and a nod type of smile. Like, we know what's going on when you two go home. We're like, really, it's not. We
never get asked if there should be more than one check.
Never, ever. Yeah. And then, you know, it's fine. It's just an amusing thing that happens a lot. And I wanted to tell that story so I could tell this story and one more after it. And actually one more in between those two. Feel free to jump in as well.
As long as you got the order down.
We call this phenomenon, after Twitter, hashtag this is why people think we're gay.
Yep.
Whenever we go places and like one of us holds the door and says, "After you, babe," for the other one, or offers to pay, or that kind of thing.
Or, you know, when we make out in public.
Right, whenever we make out in public, you know, hashtag this is why people think we are in a relationship of that kind. Another time, we were out and about, and I was buying a bicycle.
This is the best. So Tom needed to buy a bicycle, and I wouldn't call myself an avid biker, but I bike more than Tom did at the time.
Which is to say, at all.
At all. And I know some things about bicycles and bicyclery, so I figured I'd help him out, and I knew some bike stores and some information, and so we went to a few places to check out the aforementioned bicycles.
Bicycles.
There are two cycles.
Yeah, they cycle twice per annum?
Sure.
Yeah. And so we go to the bicycle shop, and we're looking at them, and a man wanders over And he asks us what we're up to. And I said, well, I'm looking to purchase one of your velocipedes. And, you know, I've got some plans for what I'm going to do. He's like, so what are you thinking about doing with your bike? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to be riding on dirt roads, because that's where I lived at the time, on some dirt roadage. You know,
actually, as I recall, the conversation went something like this. He asked, well, where do you think you're going to be riding? Because he was trying to differentiate, like, do you need a road bike? Do you need a mountain bike? And I'm standing next to him, and Tom gestures toward me and goes, pretty much wherever this one takes me.
Ah, yes, that is what I said. And the guy kind of looks at us kind of funny, and he goes, well, you could do that together. In a tone that clearly implied that he thought we were doing many, many things together, which was humorous.
Yeah.
We had a good chuckle. So this happens to us a lot. It's good for a laugh for everybody involved. We don't make a big deal of it, but it is funny. It's a funny thing that happens in our lives.
So anyway, that's a story to start off our board game podcast.
Oh, is that what this podcast is about?
About board games.
Board games.
So the game that we jokingly referenced last week was Trolls vs. Dragons, and in very short order, I think, in fact, the next day, Tom had come up with a rough concept of what that game would actually be.
I believe we suggested it in a podcast we recorded on a Thursday. I spit out a rough concept on Friday when I was supposed to be doing almost anything else.
Right.
And I had written a set of approximate rules on Saturday. So,
yep.
Quick turnaround time on that one.
We're either brilliant or there's something very, very wrong with us.
I think the key is that I had a lot of other stuff I should have been doing. And so this
is a great motivator.
Yeah, exactly. You know, procrastination isn't about putting things off. It's about putting one thing off by doing other things.
Right.
So if you get an extremely important thing you have to do to set at the top of your list, you'll get all of the slightly less important stuff right underneath it done.
So might you say that you know, getting some writing done or you know, designing a board game when you should be doing your chores is called procrastination?
Yeah.
I feel like that could have been better, but I didn't know where else to go with it.
I was going to make a joke about how, like, in the middle of World War II, FDR just, like, wrote 7 best-selling novels when he should have been plotting invasions, but I didn't really have anywhere to go with it that was particularly good.
Glad you brought it up anyway.
Well, you brought up your lame joke. So anyway, we came up with a set of rules for Trolls versus Dragons, sent them off to Johannes, and we thought tonight we would talk about kind of how that process went, our design process, what that looks like, and where we're planning to go with it. I think you've read through, about half of them at this point?
Not even. I think I got 2 pages in.
I guess, should we just start out with, like, design goals and work our way up from there? Should we start with a rule, read through the rules, or what? What do you think?
Give me the the pitch. How's the game supposed to work in broad strokes?
In broad strokes, what I wanted to do was have a game where you could, well, you know, you got Trolls versus Dragons, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
My immediate thought was that you're trying to steal from each other. So the dragons are trying to grab something from the trolls trying to grab something from the dragons. And that kind of suggested to me like an asymmetrical strategy type game.
Mm-hmm.
And that led into thinking, you know, a defender-attacker dynamic where one side is defending, one side is attacking in any given round.
Mm-hmm.
And you would want dragon play, either the play of the two sides, to feel different from each other, even though you're using roughly the same mechanics.
Right.
It seemed to make sense that the dragons would be sort of a one super powerful unit type of thing,
mm-hmm.
whereas the trolls would be more of a swarm
right.
type of mechanic. So you would have the dragon player playing a very tactical game where he's placing his one unit carefully and husbanding that unit's actions and that kind of thing. Whereas the trolls are playing more of a strategic game where they have to marshal their troops and decide where they're going to go and maneuver them around to get at whatever they're trying to get.
Mm-hmm.
Where that wound up going was a game where you've got a two-sided board, one where the trolls are trying to steal gold from the dragon, the other side where the dragon are trying to eat the troll's pigs.
You just flip a coin to decide which one you're playing, or?
Yeah, you randomly determine by any mutually agreeable manner, or another suggestion I make toward the end of the rule document is play 2 games back-to-back,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, high score over both games is the overall winner. So that's what I was thinking in broad strokes. In slightly smaller strokes, I wanted to include elements of deck building in it, or at least deck modification.
Uh-huh.
So the trolls and dragons are represented by a deck of cards that you use to control them on the board. So you've got, or I'm sorry, you've got tokens on the board for your trolls or your dragon.
Right.
But you've got a deck of cards to do your actions with. For the trolls, that deck grows over the course of the game as your trolls regenerate. And because, you know, in classical fantasy mythology, as it were, that doesn't really work, but whatever.
It was the joke we made about trolls regenerate unless you hit them with fire.
Exactly. Yeah. That's kind of the thing in fantasy. Let trolls regenerate unless you hit them with fire. So if the dragon claws your troll in half, the top half grows a new set of legs. The bottom half grows a new
troll,
and you now have two trolls.
Right.
So I wanted to include that so your troll deck gets bigger and more powerful as the dragon mauls your trolls.
Mm-hmm.
The dragon deck, by contrast, probably starts out more powerful and grows weaker as the trolls injure the dragon.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the ideas I had in mind as I was trying to put it together.
All right. So I've got the components. I at least read this part. There's two dragon decks and two troll decks, so you can have up to four players.
Yeah, yeah.
There's two dragon tokens and... how many troll tokens? Where is that?
I wrote down 50.
Oh, there they are. I missed it.
Just an arbitrarily large number. You just need
right,
a bunch.
Because you can just keep...
Yeah. There's no limit on that.
Keep making trolls. And then there's a more trolls deck.
So that is where you get your extra troll cards as you regenerate from.
Okay.
And what I'm thinking there is that the base troll deck is fine. Like, mm-hmm. It has the stuff you need to do your stuff in it. But it's relatively weak, whereas most of the best troll cards, the ones that are the most powerful individually, lurk in that more trolls deck.
Okay, so really your power in having more and more trolls is coming more from expanding your deck than it is from actually having more troll tokens on the board?
Yes and no. Having more troll tokens will matter in that you can move them, you can cover more ground, the dragon can't as easily keep, you know, them under control and under his claw.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, a lot of your power is coming from getting more and better troll cards into your hand.
Right. So then we've got a board, two sides, one for dragon defending, one for troll defending.
Mm-hmm.
20 bite markers. What are those?
So what I'm thinking there, the dragon has three ways of harming your trolls.
Mm-hmm.
He can claw them, he can bite them, or he can burn them with his fiery breath.
Okay.
Claw's pretty simple. The way that works, you've got a troll token on the board, the dragon claws it, you flip that upside down to show that it's been clawed.
Mm-hmm.
Then, on the troll player's turn, they can use their cards to regenerate it, which flips it back over and potentially generates more trolls from it.
Okay.
I didn't want to have to track, like, how many pieces did you claw the troll into?
Uh-huh.
Because that's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, that's no fun.
So if you draw, like, say you've got one token flipped face down,
mm-hmm.
and you play a card that regenerates for three...
Mm-hmm.
That lets you flip the troll over, back face up, and then regenerate two more trolls from it. So pretty straightforward.
Okay. Go ahead.
The bite, however, works a little bit differently in that it can only ever target a single troll, because
mm-hmm.
that's how a bite works. It's just one mouth, whereas right. this claw can kind of maul through a whole wad of trolls.
Like cleave.
Yeah, yeah. But the bite has the advantage that if you bite a troll in half and swallow its upper body... That upper body isn't going to regenerate. It's going to fall into the fiery gut of the dragon and be gone.
Gotcha.
So bite markers, when you bite, say I bite a troll for three.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to flip the troll over and put three bite markers on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it costs three regenerate to get rid of the bite markers and then one more to flip it face up.
Okay.
So it's harder to regenerate a bitten troll.
Okay.
So that's the thought.
Have a, other than that it only does one, what would keep a dragon from... ever choosing claw over bite?
Bite can only hit one troll at a time.
Other than that?
Nothing.
So they could make it so that the trolls never regenerate more trolls. Just they said, I'm never ever going to claw. I'm just not going to do that. I'm just going to a war of attrition these trolls to death by only ever biting them.
Sure, but if you just bite the trolls, there's only ever going to be a small number that are flipped... There's only, I mean, it's going to take a little number balance, too, to make mm-hmm. sure you can't pile a huge amount of bite on a single troll. But if you've only flipped over one or two of my trolls by biting them,
mm-hmm.
first up, the rest of my trolls have a lot more mobility that way. They can make a run for your gold.
Okay.
And second up, I can dedicate more resources to regenerating those trolls, I think.
Okay. Well, so we'll have to see, first of all, how it works out with the troll side of combat and how it works out with the balance.
Yeah, that is
we haven't even talked troll combat.
That is a good point, though. there.
So, and then we've got, working through the components, we'll get to troll combat in a second. I think we'll probably want to do, an anatomy of a turn for each side.
Yeah.
So, 25 knight tokens, 5 knights, 20 blanks. What are those all about?
So there's going to be a pool of those knight tokens face down, jumbled up by the board.
That's knight with a K.
With a K, yeah. So when... both troll and dragon cards, some of them, some percentage, probably around, I would say 10% maybe, will have a little knight token in the corner. If you play any of those over the course of your turn, you then have to flip that many knight tokens face up. And if you flip one that's not a blank face up, so it's got a little knight guy on it, that means a crusading knight has ridden into the middle of the battle and is trying to make a name for himself by fighting a trolls and a dragon at the same time.
Okay.
And basically, he's going to ride in and attack and do damage. And if you kill him, you get victory points. But you don't have to. You could just ignore him or let him get in your opponent's way or whatever.
Okay.
Or just a little injection of chaos.
And what was it again that makes them happen?
Cards that you play.
Oh, certain cards have a knight icon.
Certain cards have a knight icon, and if you flip face up a knight, a token that has a knight on it, then he appears.
Yep. Okay, 10 gold/pig tokens, which are double-sided, or 9 of them? No, they're all double-sided?
All double-sided.
One side is gold, the other side is pig, except for the 10th one, which has a gold troll head or a big pig token.
Yep.
Those are, I presume, the treasure that is being stolen.
Exactly. So if you're raiding the mountain, you use the gold side. If you're the trolls raiding the mountain, you use the gold side. If you are the pig dragon stealing pigs from trolls, you use the pig side.
Okay.
And the gold troll head or big pig tokens are just worth extra victory points.
Okay.
Other than that, they're identical.
How do you know which one? You can't obscure which one you're getting.
No.
So you'll always know which one is the big pig or the gold troll head.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you decide when they get that one?
They grab it when they get to the. Well, for the pig, the pigs move around a little bit, so they might just have to go to wherever it went to grab it. For the gold, I figure you can just grab it right away, and then the dragon knows you have it. And
are they harder to move?
No, they're not harder to move. They're just worth one extra point.
Really, you would pretty much want to go for that as soon as you get to treasure?
You'd want to go for it early, yeah.
Okay.
But each regular pig or gold is worth one victory point.
Mm-hmm.
The big pig and gold troll are worth 2.
Okay.
So if I'm the trolls and I dedicate a lot of resources to getting the gold troll head, I'm only getting one extra victory point out of it, so the dragon might be better off letting me have that and defending the rest of the horde, because he'll still win if he's got 7 of his one-pointers, and I only got the gold troll head and one other.
How many can you only grab one thing per...
An individual troll can carry one thing at a time.
Okay. Dragon... So how would you dedicate more resources to getting a big gold troll head rather than just
I might have other trolls moving with that troll to pick it up if he's killed, or to attack the dragon to keep it away from it.
Okay, it seems like it might need work, but again, we're only halfway through the rules, so we'll see.
I don't even think we're halfway through the rules.
Well, yeah. And then 4 12-sided turn dice. Why'd you go with D12s?
Pure blue sky. I like D12s.
They don't get a lot of love.
Yeah, okay. I felt like 12 turns per player was enough. My original end game...
Oh, that's to track turns.
Yeah.
You're not rolling them. Like we're on turn 1, we're on turn 2.
Exactly.
Okay.
So my original victory conditions were the dragon, all the dragons die, all the trolls die, obviously. Everything gets taken, so there's no pigs left to fight over. I think that was it, actually. And I felt like that would lead to some long and frustrating games. Yeah. So I thought we need something to... We need a timer on it, basically, to keep it from dragging out.
Sure.
And trolls, by Lord of the Rings, turn to stone in the sunlight, so I thought some way of tracking when dawn comes would be the best way to go about that.
Okay.
So I figured I'd give each player a dice, increment it once each turn. When everybody's show 12, game's over.
I gotcha. If you end the game when there are no more pigs, that makes sense because the dragon ate all the pigs. But if you end the game when there's no more gold, why doesn't the dragon just keep attacking to get the gold back?
The trolls can carry the gold off the board.
Oh, and then it's gone.
Yeah,
it can't be reclaimed once it's off the board.
Once they get it off the board, it can't be reclaimed.
Okay. These are short flight dragons. They're like puddle jumper dragons. They only go so far.
Sure.
And then they run out of dragon fuel.
Dragon gasoline. Actually, dragon diesel. Dragons are diesel operated.
Yeah?
Yeah. Turns out.
That's why all the black smoke.
Right.
Okay.
So the board. The board is divided into squares and areas.
Okay.
Dragons move area to area. Trolls move square to square. There are six areas arranged in a 2x3 grid. Each area consists of nine squares in a 3x3 grid.
Okay.
So the trolls have to cross square by square to get where they're going. Mm-hmm. Dragons got to go area by area. The dragon lands in the middle square of a given area, but that doesn't really make a huge difference. He's just in that area, and he can
reach all of them in the area. All in the squares area. In the area.
Exactly. So that kind of gives the dragons and the trolls a little bit of a different way of thinking about the board and thinking about how they're going to move around it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you're raiding the dragon mountain, if you're in the mountain, you can interact with things outside of the mountain area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also specified ways in and out of it, like square. You can't always get into it. There's tunnels. Okay. Turn die, we already talked about. So gameplay-wise, a card for both the trolls and the dragons, the cards are broken up into things that you always get when you play a card and things that you have to choose. So the things that you always get, draw, lets you draw that many cards when you play it.
Mm-hmm.
Plays, it gives you that many additional cards to play when you play it, and special, any special rules it happens to have.
Mm-hmm.
So the troll players, for example, by default can only play two cards on their turn, but those cards they play may allow them to chain more cards after it. Kind of like Dominion with actions.
Sure.
So once the trolls play it, they need to decide if they're playing it for movement, regeneration, or attack.
And every card will have every one of those options on
it? To various degrees.
Okay.
Playing drawing cards. So if you want to move trolls, you have to play enough cards to have enough. So say I've got three trolls in a square and I want to move them.
Mm-hmm.
Trolls like to stick together and they don't move fast. So in order to get those trolls to go, I've got to play enough movement to move all of them. So I need at least three movement to get that square moving. Then I can move each of those trolls one square.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
They can break up from there, but I got to get enough to get them all going before any of them will go.
Right.
So if you've got trolls on their own, it's a little bit easier to move them, I guess.
How would you split them off of a group?
Well, if I play those, if I've got those three trolls in a square,
uh-huh.
and I play 3 points of movement, I can move one of the three trolls one square to the left and the other two one square up. They don't have to move in the same direction.
But so, okay, I guess thematically that just doesn't make any sense because you say they only move as a group, so I have to move the whole group before I can move them, but then they move not as a group. They just move in different directions at the same time.
Yeah, maybe that doesn't work. I think troll movement might need work then.
Probably.
Okay.
About to start.
Regenerating trolls we talked about. You play it for as much regeneration. You play cards for their regenerate value.
Mm-hmm.
For one, and then you can spend that regenerate point to do the following things. For one of it, 1 point, you can flip a troll token that doesn't have a bite marker face up.
Mm-hmm.
For 1 point, you can place a new troll token on the same square as a troll token you just flipped.
Okay.
And for 1 point, you can remove a bite token marker from a troll token.
How big are these squares going to be?
I'm thinking not huge, but...
Is there a limit to the number of trolls that can be in a square?
No, not that I thought of.
Oh, because they're tokens, so you can stack them on top of each other. Okay, fair enough.
And then whenever you place a new troll token in this manner, you draw a card from the More Trolls deck.
Okay.
Pretty straightforward.
Yep.
Attacking dragons, you play troll cards for your attack value, and then you can perform actions based on that. For 1 point, one point of attack, you can have a troll pile onto a dragon. You jump on it and hold it. And you set any piled on trolls on top of the dragon token, or for 1 point you can have it throw a javelin at the dragon.
Trolls have javelins.
We'll go with it, yeah. Or okay. We might want to change it to like spray acidic snot all over it if we want to go with the gross out humor.
Just whip
more.
A rock.
What's that?
Just chuck a rock.
Oh yeah, or huck a rock at it. And so that will either hurt the dragon with the javelins, or it will slow it down if you pile onto it.
Okay.
A troll in the same square as a gold token can grab it and carry it around. It's not slow by doing it, but it can only carry one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And if a troll takes a token to the edge of the board, it can move off the board, which secures the gold for the trolls.
Is that troll then gone?
Yeah, he can't come back. If the trolls are defending and a troll is adjacent to a pig, you can slap that pig. You can just haul off and belt at one.
Just smack it.
Yep. And that causes the pig to move one square directly away from the troll. It does not require a card to do that.
I like smacking them.
So each troll can just smack one pig per turn. So you can use that to manipulate the pigs and get them away from the dragon.
Okay.
So that's the trolls. The dragon cards work the same way. They've got draw, play, and special there, so that mm-hmm. it's the same thing. Dragons can play three cards per turn by default, so they have a little bit more power than the trolls in that way. And they have more statistics to choose from on the card. They got flight, claw, bite, breathe fire, and scale. So flight is just like movement for trolls. You use the dragon can fly one area per flight that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Minus one for each troll that's piled on it.
Okay.
So if you've got a bunch of trolls hanging off of you, you've got to either kill them first or play more flight to move with them.
Mm-hmm.
You can carry them around too.
Do you total your movement and points from the three cards that you've played, or is it per card?
Totaled. It totaled for the ones you play for flight.
Okay, so it's so you only get to play three cards.
But remember, the cards have that play on them.
I understand that.
Okay.
You play three cards. They all have all three values on them. Mm-hmm. Or all in the case of dragons, all five values on them.
Mm-hmm.
So do you play them all at once, or do you play one and resolve it, play another one and resolve it, play another one and resolve it?
You could play them all at once and decide what you wanted to play them for. So you might say, I want to play this one for flight, this one for claw, this one for bite.
Okay. But then...
But you might...
So I say I played two for flight for mm-hmm. a total of six flight. Can I go... And they were three and three. Can I go move two, bite, move four?
Yeah, I think so.
And
I think
I can split it up, not just between cards, but I can split up the total move from the cards I played for movement?
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. When you're moving your dragon around, you can also pay two flight to fly up and away from the board, fly high,
mm-hmm.
in which case you're safe, but you also can't really do anything to the trolls until you come back on a future turn.
Gotcha.
If you do that, you'd leave any trolls behind. You can't take them into the sky with you.
Okay. Do they just fall back and are unharmed?
Yep, they just fall back. It's assumed the trolls are smart enough to jump off before you get too high up there.
Okay.
Claw and bite attacks. Claw is pretty straightforward. Each point of claw lets you flip over one troll in the same area as you.
Right, we talked about that.
Yep. Each point of bite lets you flip over when you bite, you can only ever bite one troll per turn.
Right.
You flip the troll over and you put that number of bite markers on it, the number of bite you played.
Okay.
Then the trolls have to regenerate from there.
Right.
Fire Breath works a little bit differently. When you play a card for its Fire Breath value, you set it aside,
mm-hmm.
And in a special little area you reserve for that.
Okay.
And once you've set aside a total amount of Fire Breath equal to 10, or greater than 10, I guess, then you can breathe fire. You discard all of those cards and you breathe fire right away. All troll tokens in a single square are removed. They're just dead.
So you breathe fire as soon as you play the card that puts you over 10?
Yes.
Okay.
So what you've got kind of a game there where you are tying up resources fairly for potentially a while over there, because you don't have a huge amount of cards in your hand. And I'm thinking if we keep the amount of fire on an individual card low,
mm-hmm.
you know, most of them will be ones and twos, probably with a few threes and maybe a couple of fours sprinkled in. It might take you a couple of turns to build up fire breath, but when you do, you can incinerate a whole group of trolls at once.
Okay.
But in the meantime, you're tying up those cards. You don't have them available. They're not cycling through your deck.
Right.
So that's that.
And then scale is the last one.
Yeah. When trolls hit you with javelins, you have to, and this is the one place where you play cards out of turn. When trolls attack you with javelins, you have to immediately play cards for their scale value.
Mm-hmm.
If you are unable to equal or beat the amount of attack that the trolls hit you with, your dragon immediately flies high. They've thrown enough javelins at you that you have to run away.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remove the difference between what you played and what they dealt from mm-hmm. the top of your deck from the game. They're just lost.
Okay.
That number of cards, that is.
Okay. So you have to play defense from your hand.
Yes.
Out of turn, because it's only when you're attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't make it up, you remove that number of cards from the top of your deck.
Correct.
We didn't mention it, but the trolls, at the end of their turn, discard down to five cards. Do the dragons do that as well?
Down to eight.
They're down to eight.
Yes. But they don't draw back up to eight at the end of the turn. You draw at the start. So the dragons also got the game of thinking, how much do I think they're going to throw at me
uh-huh.
on their turn, and how much do I have to hold back to play for scale?
Okay, what's to stop a dragon from always flying up into the stratosphere at the end of every turn?
It's a really good point. Nothing at the moment. We need to work on that.
Okay.
Good call. Nothing except that it costs you two flight to do it, I guess.
Right, but two flight is nothing compared to potentially your whole hand. And then cards permanently lost from your deck.
Yeah, and since it lets you fly, return to the board anywhere you want.
Yeah. That might be a little overpowered.
Yeah, so we might need to work on that, make it harder to fly up and away. Good point. Good call. In the unlikely event that the trolls are able to completely deplete your deck in this way, you lose because your dragon was killed.
Okay, is that the only way the dragon can be killed?
Yeah, that's completely. That's how you kill the dragon.
Okay.
If the dragon... Anytime a dragon moves away from an area with pigs in it, so you're in an area, there are pigs in it, and you move either fly high or move to another area, you can pick up and take two of those pigs with you.
So any one dragon can take two pigs?
A dragon can carry two pigs, one on each claw.
Right.
If you fly high with pigs in tow, you take them beyond the troll's reach, and it's assumed you set them down in some, I don't know, high valley or somewhere where the trolls won't get at them, and you can go eat them at your leisure.
Okay.
And that's how you score victory points as the dragon raiding pigs.
Gotcha. That also might be too easy. That might make...
Sure. Sure.
Because the trolls aren't very fast, and they have to move off the board, and they may well be in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
The dragon is fast and can move out basically immediately with two pigs at a time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I think we will also probably run into some balance problems with two dragons versus two troll players.
Yeah. Good call. Yeah, the dragons are pretty powerful here.
I mean, that's what we were going for, but we don't want them to be so powerful that it's just not, you know, they always win.
Right. Another option the dragon has is to eat a pig from the same area at the beginning of his turn. You can eat one per turn. If you do, you can breathe fire without having any cards to play for it.
Mm-hmm.
You just immediately breathe it because you've got a pig.
You've got to burn all that bacon grease.
Yeah, exactly. Trolls aren't greasy, which is why when you eat one of them, it doesn't.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't set off your fire breath.
Right.
But that pig is now worth no victory points to anybody.
Right.
At the end of every dragon turn, if there are pigs in the same area as it, those pigs move directly away from the dragon.
Okay.
A pig that moves off the board in this way is lost and worth no victory points to anyone.
Okay.
Dragons...
How much? They move just one?
Just one square, yeah.
Okay.
If the dragon is defending... And there is gold that trolls are not holding onto in the same square, in the same area as the dragon,
mm-hmm.
you can pick up to two pieces of gold and carry them around.
So you just to keep them.
Keep them away from the trolls to move them back to the horde, that kind of a thing.
Well,
no, you would want to move them back to the horde because the dragon only scores victory points for gold for stuff that's still in the horde.
Yeah.
So if it's left in the outside somewhere, dragon doesn't score, but neither do the trolls. Trolls score for getting it off the board.
Off the board.
Finally, the knights. I mentioned that they show up when you play a card from either deck that has a knight icon. You flip a token, and if it's blank, nothing happens. If it has a knight on it, you place him on a square, on any square on the edge of the board, and then he goes riding around. Knights act at the beginning of each turn. They move one square toward the nearest troll or dragon, favoring dragons because it's a better story to kill a dragon than a troll.
Okay.
Ties are broken by the player whose turn it is.
Mm-hmm.
Straightforward way to do it. And if they reach a square with anything in it, they deal 3 points. They attack as if it were 3 points of claw or javelin. Knight is killed by 5 points of attack from trolls, 5 points of claw or bite from a dragon. If you breathe fire on a knight, or on a square that he's in, that is, you flip him like a coin.
Mm-hmm.
And if he lands with the knight face up, he used his shield to deflect your fire, and he survives. Otherwise, he's killed. I thought about having special knights, like there are 5 knights right now, and having 2 of them be special, one of them that does extra damage to dragons, one that does extra damage to trolls, but that might be too complicated.
When knights do damage to trolls, do the trolls regenerate?
Yeah, it's exactly as if they were hit by a claw.
Oh, right, yeah, you said that.
So I don't.
And then when a killed knight is worth victory points for the player.
Yep. I don't know that having a unique knight that is better against each side would be worthwhile.
I don't know. Maybe.
Like a knight with a flaming sword who does more damage to trolls or something like that. Yeah.
Knight with a... whatever.
Scoring. Game ends when either all of one side are dead. All of the gold or pigs have been taken off the board, eaten, or lost.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no more potential to gain victory points. Or all of the turn dice show 12.
Okay.
You get a point for every knight. When the trolls are defending, they get a point for each pig that's on the board anywhere. Dragons get a point for each pig they were able to carry off the board or that is held by a dragon at the end of the game, and the big pig is worth 2 points. When the dragons are defending, The dragons get a point for each gold token that is still on the starting space, the little horde space at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. Trolls get a point for each gold token that was carried off the board, and the gold troll head token is worth 2 points. Winner is the side with the most victory points, and you could also try playing it 2 games back-to-back, switching defender and attacker roles and totaling the points between the two. Or, you know, don't do that. Do what you want, man. It's a free country.
So that's the game as it is. We already came up with a few little things that need tweaking. If you have ideas, let us know. If we missed some glaringly obvious error, let us know. Or if you think there's something we should add.
Do you want a link to the rules in the show notes?
Yeah, I'll dump it in the show notes.
Okay.
We'd love your feedback. I guess we'll kind of run with this one kind of the same way we did with Wiki Sleuth. Anything you guys want to add to it, we'd love to sort of collaborate with the gaming community to make this happen.
And I already have like 19 ideas for expansions, so.
Yeah. So, if you have anything to share on the subject, hit us up on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
Shoot us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or leave a comment on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow or on Stitcher or on iTunes. Or
just yell. Yell just your shout. Comment really, really loud. I'll hear it. Sharp ears. The eyes of a hawk and the ears of a fox.
So we'll be right back after this word from our sponsor.
Boom.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by Bitcoin. Want to lose all of your money but don't have a back alley craps game handy? Try Bitcoin. First, you trade actual money to the operator of a shady website in exchange for a virtual wallet full of pretend dollars. Then, he has all of your money and you have nothing. Finally, you miss a rent payment and get hurled into the street. Bitcoin, what the hell is wrong with you?
Well, welcome back, readers, to the second part of the show.
They're still listeners.
Listeners? To the second part of the show, this week we both thought the other guy was planning out our topic for this part, so we're going to go ahead and just do another instance of Booze in the News. So, Booze in the News, what do you got?
I got a couple things here. One of them, I think you will really not appreciate at all.
Oh, good.
Which is why I picked it.
Yay. Hooray for that.
Redhead banned from school for being too ginger. Let's all just take a deep breath and appreciate
for
the
those,
look on Tom's face, which you can't see because this is an audio-only podcast.
For those in the audience who are deeply, deeply slow on the uptake, I have red hair, it turns out.
Yep.
Yes. So let's go ahead. We'll just give you a moment here to get all of the South Park references to the Ginger Kids episode out of your system. Just do it. Do what you got to do.
Understand. We'll give you a moment of silence, and you can just shout them at your stereo or computer or whatever you're listening on. All right. So now that that's done and over with, apparently a 17-year-old who was about to sit her senior exams has been banned from school because her hair is too ginger. Emily Ray has naturally auburn hair and told the Mirror that she has had the same color for 3 years. So the headline of this, and actually the whole kind of just feel of the article makes it seem like she has naturally red hair, like mm-hmm. ginger hair, and got in trouble for it. They never once say that she colors her hair outright. They just say she has naturally auburn hair. And auburn is, you know, sort of a reddish color, but I guess you wouldn't call it ginger. Maybe.
See, I don't know, because like the term ginger seems to encompass more than just the hair. Like, oh, don't get me wrong, it is the red hair, mm-hmm. and people use it that way, but like that horrid nightmarish South Park episode that made my sophomore year of college, where I lived with a huge South Park fan, just horrifying.
Yeah,
seemed to imply also that it included a certain like an excessive degree of paleness. I'm like, I'm pretty pale. But I'm not that pale. I'm that pale.
You're pretty pale.
Pretty pale. And also, like, just a pile ton of freckles.
Yeah.
Just an absurd number of them, which I don't have. Don't have all that many freckles, it turns out. So, like, isn't that what ginger people in the UK get, like, hate-crimed about? is having all those freckles and such, or is that
I think
different?
It's just I think that's just part of it. I think really the hair color, the ginger hair color, is really enough to do it.
It's enough. Oh
yeah. So anyway, you know, it goes on. She's at school in the UK, which is, you know, why all the ginger hazing, I think. And
yeah, you don't really get ginger hazing so much in the United States. Like, I never
just South Park referencing.
Just South Park references. The only consistent thing I remember from growing up that was weird about having red hair was that when you were in line at the grocery store with your parents, like middle-aged women would want to touch it and tell you how lovely your hair was.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's maybe just don't touch. Maybe just keep your hand off of the red hair. And actually, a guy I knew in college was like, can I touch it? Like, it's weird. Like, red hair is weird and I want to touch it. And I'm like, I guess, but like, I don't really want you to, but I see no way of, I don't want to fight about it.
I would have just been like, no, that's weird.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable. I wish it hadn't happened.
I mean, I got that, but I dyed my hair wacky colors. They were like, I've been like, yeah, well, it feels like straw because I've burned the garbage out of it with chemicals and now it's bright blue. So sure, I guess you can touch it if you can reach my head, which you can't because I'm 3 feet taller than you. But anyway, so this whole, actually the author finally admits at the end here, note the author of this article admits she is completely biased because of her red hair. But like the whole thing, you know, it's a funny headline, but she dyed her hair a color, and whether or not the school has a policy against it, and you know, for whatever reason they decided to enforce it at that time after 3 years of her hair being the same color. But yeah, it's just, it's dumb. But my favorite part of this article after the headline is that the article looks pretty long when you get to it until you realize that it's really about two, three reasonable paragraphs long. And then the author fills out the last page or so with facts about red hair.
What are some facts about my people?
Well, yeah, I want to know if these are true or maybe they're ginger racist and we should all be offended. Red hair is the rarest color in the human race, with only 2% of the population fortunate enough to be blessed with its glorious hue. Red hair and associated freckles are caused by a variation in the MC1R gene. Research suggests reds have a remarkable capacity to produce higher levels of vitamin D from less sunlight, which is good because you're so pale, you'll probably burn otherwise.
Yeah, we can't go outside.
Apparently, redheads feel pain differently.
That's true.
You need more anesthesia to knock them out on the operating table.
Have
any experience with that?
I don't, because I don't know if I've ever actually gone under anesthesia, ever. I know that my sister has claimed, who also is a redhead, has claimed that she needs more, like, Novocaine and stuff at the dentist to get not a nightmare, horrible experience.
I don't have red hair, and Novocaine, Xylocaine, and Lidocaine don't affect me at all.
That seems like it would be inconvenient. Isn't that all the canes? Are there any other canes?
It's all the ones I know of.
Okay.
It's terrible. I make them knock me out when I go to the dentist now because it's bad.
It's probably better that way.
But apparently the variation in pain sensation can also account for an ability to enjoy spicy hot food. I think that seems like conjecture at best.
I've never noticed a particular affinity for it.
And now it just gets just like way out there. Redheads are also fabulous in business. University of Tennessee and Dalton State College study found redheads were 4 times more likely to be CEOs than other hair colors with a U because this person is British.
What?
Yeah, this is just...
That sounds dumb and bad and I don't like it.
You were more likely to be burned at the stake as a witch in the 15th century.
Oh, well, okay.
I like this one. In dating, while some research has suggested redheads were less likely to be approached for mating due to their hair color, Elevated Today suggests it might actually be a good idea to marry a redhead because they are genetically superior.
Just genetically superior,
yep,
in general.
There's nothing. There's no citation. Whatever Elevated Today is says that redheads are genetically superior. So good on you. Whatever Elevated Today is says that you are genetically superior.
Wow. Thanks, Elevated Today. I really appreciate that.
Okay. What do you have?
All right, I had a article on BGR.com stating that flip phone user asks the internet how he can ask for girls' numbers without feeling like a loser.
I like this one already.
And I selected this one because I wanted to reach out to this flip phone user.
A flip phone loser.
Flip phone, no, user.
Loser.
It's a U. It's a user. Because there's nothing wrong with having a flip phone in 2015. In fact, it's a sign of virility and enhanced vigor. And I say that with no connection to the fact that I have a flip phone, too.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, I don't really worry about asking girls out anymore because I got married to one.
Yeah. You lucked out there. If she did she know you had a flip phone? That's the real question here.
She did know I had a flip phone at the time.
Yeah, I think this guy's problem is really not about the flip phone.
There might be some confidence issues going on there.
Did you read into the article at all? Does it go on to say that like we labeled him a flip phone user just because it made a funny headline, but really he has serious issues?
No,
and that's
he posted on some website called Quora for advice on how to ask for women's phone numbers on his flip phone without coming across like a loser. And apparently the users of Quora were, quote, much more civilized than the Twitter or YouTube comments. That wasn't a direct quote. I paraphrased heavily. So you got some fairly thoughtful responses. Something stuff like, at the end of the day, don't feel bad about it. It is just a tool in our life. You cannot let people define who you are with your phone. You need to tell them. Pull out your phone with confidence and tell the story you want people to hear. You are the person who can control your personal brand. Don't let other people tell your story.
Wow.
Okay, I want to talk directly to everybody right now. If you care about phones, if you give a damn about cell phones beyond the fact that they can contact people you need to contact, you are a bad person and you should be ashamed. That is my soapbox for the day. Holy crap, people, it's a freaking phone. Why would you possibly care what kind of phone you carry if it does the things you need a phone to do for you, let alone the kind of phone that somebody else carries? Ladies, if a man rolls up to you with a flip phone, think of him as thrifty, perhaps. He doesn't want to shell out for an expensive cell phone he doesn't need.
Okay, so we've been good the last few episodes. There wasn't a single swear for me to edit out with chicken noises last week, but I just gotta listen, this whole article... You can replace flip phone as just a stand-in for tiny penis. This is every stupid, shallow dating article ever written. It's just funny because it's about Tom and his dumb flip phone, which he just pulled out.
My wife is in the driveway, and she wants to come in the house without ruining our podcast.
Which is very kind of her.
So I pulled out the phone to show Johannes the text she sent asking us to pause so she could walk in without the door noise.
But I couldn't read it because I can't see flip phones.
So well, should we pause, or should I just have her come in?
Just have her come in.
Okay, hold on. I'm texting my wife.
Can your phone handle it?
Yes, it can handle it. Hold on, it just takes a while because you gotta hit the button three times to get to certain letters.
You know, it occurs to me that as good an idea as this is, she's gonna want to say hello to you and everything, so I'm gonna end up having to pause anyway. So
no,
we'll be back.
No, it's fine. We'll just put her on the air. She's like a special guest. We haven't had one of those
yet.
She's
so special.
She is pretty special, and she didn't mind my flip phone.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the first things she said to me is that your flip phone is hot. It didn't happen. That was a lie. Made that up.
Yeah. She was like, it's okay. Everyone has a flip phone. Really, all this stuff about iPhones and smartphones, that's just in the movies and pornography. You don't need to feel bad about your flip phone. It's perfectly average.
Oh my gosh. It's a perfectly good flip phone. There's nothing wrong with it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to feel bad about your flip phone at all.
Right, don't my.
I'm sure it's a perfectly nice flip phone.
It is a perfectly nice flip phone. My wife is now in the room. She's looking at us with disgust. Really, I think is that expression. Say hi to the people.
Hi, people.
That was my wife, Elise.
Now you all know Tom has not been lying about actually being married to a real live woman.
Yes, and she didn't mind. She does not mind my flip phone.
How do you feel about Tom's flip phone?
Well, I'm just going to say, I think it's a little bit ridiculous that my husband works in IT and does not have a smartphone. But he would probably just spend the whole time just playing Bloons Tower Defense. So it's probably for the
That's
better.
Enough. That's enough.
That's
you.
True. He does that anyway, probably on his computer instead.
For the record, for any coworkers listening, I have never once played Bloons Tower Defense at work. So Let's move on. What do you got? What's your next article?
I like this one. Police say woman blames coffee-drinking parrot for car crash.
I have so many questions.
Well, what are they?
Why was the parrot drinking coffee?
It's a coffee-drinking parrot. It says it right there.
Is that like a breed of parrot? I almost said brand of parrot.
It's a brand of parrot. Yeah, there's shockingly little information in this article. It's from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where my dad is from and the Amish are from. So I don't know where a car or a parrot came from, but in Uniontown, Pennsylvania, state police say woman blames her coffee-drinking pet parrot for distracting her moments before she crashed her car into a guardrail in Pennsylvania. Troopers say the 35-year-old woman was driving on a South Union Township road just before 5 p.m. Tuesday when she noticed the bird pecking at the lid of her coffee cup. The woman says she struck the guardrail when she glanced down to see what the bird was doing. She glanced. It was a long glance, or she was already pointed at that guardrail.
Well, I mean, if you're going too fast, and there's a fairly sharp turn coming up with a guardrail, and you glance away,
and your parrot is drinking your coffee,
and you're a bad driver, you might hit the guardrail.
The woman told police that the bird likes to drink coffee, and they also found bird seed in a cup holder next to the coffee and a few feathers nearby.
Was the bird okay?
Police say the woman broke her arm and had facial cuts because the airbag deployed. The bird was safely removed from the vehicle.
Oh, good.
It is unclear whether the bird was safe. That sentence just says that it was safely removed from the vehicle, not whether it was alive or dead or who was safe.
Fair enough.
But I think the bird was okay.
I want to live in a world where that bird's okay.
Yeah.
Coffee drinking parrots, everyone.
Yep. Got anything else?
I have one more. I have one final article to bring up here. This one is from, what is this? This website is gibberish. Oh, it's from The Tab.
Were you trying to figure out how to pronounce The Tab written as one word?
No, I was trying to figure out. No, the title is just hidden in a corner of the website that's not immediately obvious, and the URL doesn't give me any good info about it. The URL is nottingham.tab.co.uk, so I didn't know what the heck I was looking at. But anyway, it's from The Tab, and the headline is OED, that's the Oxford English Dictionary for the uneducated out there, literally redefine, quote, literally, to mean, quote, literally and, quote, not literally, both at the same time. I literally cannot believe this article.
I'm confused by the headline, because if you can believe the new definition of literally as posited by the headline, the first literally that they used could mean that the headline is either the case or not the case.
So really, we have no idea what this article is about at all, whatsoever.
Yep. Not a clue.
Anyway, the article begins, grammar pedants everywhere. Pedants? Pedants?
I don't know.
Sure. Literally lose their mind, which again, they might have actually misplaced their brains, yeah. Or it might be a more figurative statement. But apparently the OED now includes two definitions of literally. The first is in a literal manner or sense, exactly. As an example, the driver took it literally when asked to go straight over the traffic circle. Or another, a second definition is used to acknowledge that something is not literally true, but is used for emphasis or to express strong feeling.
See, okay, I was surprised when I heard this because that the Oxford English Dictionary had put it in.
Mm-hmm.
But they've done a better job of defining it. I want to say it was Princeton WordNet, but I'm not sure. Another online dictionary source did this a year or two ago, and they had like, you know, the literally definition, you know, this actually happened exactly as described.
Right.
But then definition number two just said figuratively.
See, that's a less useful definition, but I think it's way more entertaining.
It's way funnier.
Yeah.
But I'm glad the Oxford English Dictionary was able to make at least something functional out of it.
Sure. Sure. So what do you think about this addition to the definition of literally, that it now doesn't actually mean literally, necessarily?
Well, there's a big fight to be had that I don't think is worth having.
No.
I think we both agree that, you know, language is changing and it needs to adapt to be functional.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a dictionary that states that a word means something different than how everyone uses it,
right.
The dictionary is the thing that's not right anymore.
Exactly.
However, had they really gone with the, like, two just outright contradictory definitions of a word thing, that also makes that dictionary useless because that word can no longer be used.
Well, but there are words like that. There are other words out there that mean two opposite things.
Like what?
Cleave.
Okay, that's fair.
You can cleave a thing into two pieces, or two things can cleave together. And there's actually, I don't remember.
But cleave as a stick together is always used with two. There's a clarifying word. You cleave to something.
Okay, I see.
Or you cleave something. So yeah, that is a pretty good example, but there's still context to make it, you know, the only context you have with literally is when someone says, I literally laughed until I died. You know they're talking to you, so they didn't.
Sure,
but
sure.
There's a middle ground there where you're like, wait, do you really mean you literally did that thing, or do you mean you didn't do that thing, but you did it in your mind?
I real quick Googled it and found an article on mental floss.
Okay.
That has 14 words that are their own opposites.
Cool.
So do we just want to run down it?
Sanction.
Ow. Well, you said two.
I meant it literally.
Sanction can mean to give official permission or approval for an action or to impose a penalty on.
Yep.
Oversight can mean to oversee a thing or to overlook it.
Heard it used as overlook. That's interesting.
Well, it was an oversight.
Okay, yeah. Okay, there we go.
Left can either mean remaining or departed.
Or the opposite of right.
Or the opposite of right. If the gentleman have withdrawn to the drawing room for after-dinner cigars, who is left?
Oh, yeah.
Or the gentlemen have left and the ladies are left.
Okay.
Dust is a noun turned into a verb meaning either to add or remove the thing in question.
Yep.
So I could dust you with sugar,
no,
or I could dust the sugar off of you.
That's the...
Why am I putting sugar on you? Why did I go with sugar?
It's delicious. No, so that's the first one that has been used in the same form both ways, though.
Sure, sure, sure.
So like left was...
Well, no, sanction. I could sanction you to give approval.
That's fair.
Or I could sanction you to, you know, prevent you from developing a nuclear program.
We probably don't have to hit all 14, but are there any interesting ones in there?
Seed, stone, trim.
Okay, hold on. How is stone the opposite?
Stone is another verb to use with caution. You can either stone some peaches, but please don't stone your neighbor.
Oh, to remove the stone.
Oh, is that... I've never heard that before.
That's pretty rough.
That's stretching.
That's not, yeah.
Trim. Let's see what it's saying. Arise from an old English word meaning to make
sense.
Firm or strong, to
like,
subtle.
You can trim like decorate, or you can trim like cut off.
Okay, yeah, I got it. Cleave, as we talked about. Resign works as a contronym in writing. Ooh, contronym.
That's a cool word.
That's a good word to have. Resign means to quit. It's spelled the same as resign, meaning to sign up. That doesn't work here.
No.
That's nonsense. Mental
floss.
But we
got the word contronym out of it, so thanks for that.
It's not all bad. Fast can mean moving rapidly, as
or
in running
hold
fast
and not move at all.
Yep. Off means deactivated, but also activated, as in the alarm went off. Kinda.
I'd actually be interested in where went off came from.
Yeah, it's true. That was
etymologically.
It doesn't give us anything here. Weather can mean to withstand, or it can mean to be worn away, as in the rock was weathered.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Screen can mean to show or to hide, as in screen, you know, that ugly dude in the corner from view.
Right.
And help can mean assist, unless you can't help doing something, when it means prevent. I'm not sure I understand that one.
What was the last one? I was reading something else and ignoring you.
Fair enough. Help means assist, unless you can't help something doing something, when it means prevent.
Oh, yeah, like as in I can't help it.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. So contronyms, everybody. So there is there's precedent in the language for contronyms. So the fact that literally is now a contronym, is fine. And languages change over time, so that's fine. Also, that article is from 2013. It's an old article.
I'm looking for etymologies of go off, as in the alarm went off. And all I'm finding is really rough, like, not particularly... they're not backed up. They're just people's like, this is what I think. To go off in his sense is related to the expression to set off, meaning to start or to be started.
Mm.
It implies that the subject was in a state of rest, then moved off from that state into action.
No.
That's just, I think they're reaching.
I think so, they're reaching very far.
I don't know.
But I think the important thing to take away from the article about the word literally, or literally, is that it lets us reference the excellent character Chris Traeger from Parks and Recreation. Who is literally one of the funniest characters on television. So, that show's done, though.
Yeah, which is sad, but that does mean that soon you'll be able to watch the whole thing in one unmoving bed sores from not getting off the couch binge watch session on Netflix.
Which sounds like literally the best way to spend a weekend.
So, throwback to last week's, no, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, some number of weeks ago, as we are now seeing, I have no concept of time or numbers. One of our previous episodes, when we talked about our friend's allergies, when he first got developed his gluten allergy, he started having to order things on gluten-free buns, and he always felt like he couldn't help but order burgers like Chris Traeger. So we would be at a restaurant, and he would go, I would like a burger. I would like it on a gluten-free bun, and I would like it medium rare. And that's exactly how Chris Traeger would do that.
Majestic.
Bringing it back. So that was more booze in the news.
Booze in the news.
And
I think that about concludes the Mildly Alarming Podcast for this week.
One would hope, because we're already going pretty long.
Yeah.
I bet our listeners are like, oh, God, let it end.
No, our listeners love us.
That's very nice of them.
I know, right? They told me. All of them. Literally.
Well, they literally told you, or literally all of them?
Yes.
Wow.
All right, and that's the Mildly Alarming Podcast for this week. Folks, I am Tom Rich, and you can hit us up on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can send us a Gmail at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You can leave a comment on our website at mildlyalarming.com.
Or you can find us on Facebook, Stitcher, iTunes, and probably if you just Google it, you'll find something we didn't even know was hosting or pretending to be our podcast. So good luck with that.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.
See you next week.
Good night.
Attention podcast travelers. The following is an official travel warning. The U.S. State Department does not recommend travel to the Mildly Alarming Podcast due to ongoing hostilities with the 5-Minute Geek Show. Citizens remaining in the Mildly Alarming Podcast despite this warning should eschew any appearance of competence or good health in order to avoid conscription by the Mildly Alarming. You are urged to stay indoors whenever possible to evade detection by the invading 5-Minute Geek Squads. These injunctions will remain in effect until further notice.